You're listening to Let's Talk It Through, a podcast about the art and practice of using your voice as a tool for building happier, healthier relationships and deeper self-trust, made especially for folks who wrestle with people-pleasing tendencies. And I'm your host. I'm Michelle. I'm a communication coach for big-hearted, deep thinkers and feelers, and I run things over at The Hearty Fig. Together, we'll explore how to sidestep common communication pitfalls, build confidence in how you show up for tough conversations on your terms, and start creating the kinds of relationships you want and deserve, including your relationship with yourself. Let's get into it. Hello again. Before we just dive headfirst right into today's episode, I just want to reiterate how much fun I've been having sharing with you in this format. Loving the podcast format so far. Hope you're enjoying it too. And actually, that gives me a nice opportunity to give a little plug once again. I know I've mentioned it a couple times, but one of the cool things about Anchor, which is the platform on which I'm hosting this podcast, is that on the page where my podcast is hosted, which I believe you can just go to thehardyfig.com/podcast. But if you go to that page, there's a little button that says message, and it allows you to drop me a little voice note at any time with any feedback or thoughts or questions you might have. And one of the things I thought might be cool is if you ever had an idea for something you'd like to explore or to sort of hear more about on a future episode of this podcast, I would love to hear that from you directly. If you've got ideas or questions or things that you feel like we could use a little bit more nuance or do a deep dive on, like, I am all ears. So wanted to plant that seed again, but in any case, grateful you're here as always. And we've been talking a bit for the last few weeks about building more balanced relationships. So if you've been around, you know that we've covered everything from people pleasing and how much I hate that phrase, and yet how much there is to unpack there for those of us who kind of know those are habits we fall into sometimes. We've talked about compromise. We've talked about saying yes when we don't mean it and how we can sort of reverse that. And as we kind of wrap up this theme, I want to change gears just ever so slightly. And today we're going to be getting a bit more philosophical. So here's what I mean by that. We've been covering a lot of the tactical challenges and ideas under that topical umbrella of building more balanced relationships. And there's a reason that we've had so much to talk about under that theme. And it's because this act of claiming your space and correcting a possible imbalance, or maybe even preventing a possible imbalance in some of your relationships, is challenging. It's hard work. And throughout all of the topics that we've been touching on that I just rattled off a second ago, there's been sort of an unspoken assumption at the center of those conversations that I want us to shine a little bit of a brighter light on today. We've sort of been orbiting it, but I don't think we've really named it outright yet. So here it is. I would argue that many of us are walking around and navigating our relationships with a quiet belief or assumption that creating friction or interrupting the flow in those relationships is a violation of how we should, quote unquote, should be showing up. And if that's the belief that you've been carrying around, consciously or unconsciously, then no wonder you might be feeling guilt or discomfort or like you need to maybe apologize when the time comes to elevate a concern, challenge an assumption, cause a disturbance, you know, use your voice in that sort of uncomfortable way. And so the questions I want us to look more closely at today are not only, where does that come from, that idea that raising our voice is a violation of how we should be showing up, but also how true is it really? So we're going to explore how this belief about what's allowed, quote unquote, in our relationships might be getting in the way of speaking up more often, and how you might actually go about addressing that belief or that obstacle. So as per usual, we're going to go ahead and break up this conversation into a few main sections. So first, we'll explore those assumptions a bit more deeply, and then we'll talk about a simple but profound reframe that's going to help challenge some of those assumptions and put some of those fears into perspective. And then we'll put a bow on this whole thing with some actual integration strategies to help you translate a mindset shift into an actual new way of showing up and using your voice in your relationships. So this whole conversation we're about to have is sort of staked on the idea that speaking up honestly or directly about something that's going on with us feels hard, especially when we're unsure or nervous about how that thing is going to be received. And the first point I want to make here is this. It is absolutely valid and normal for that to be your experience. There's nothing fundamentally weird or wrong about feeling that hesitation or feeling that discomfort. And in fact, it's further evidence of your attunement and the thoughtfulness with which you move through the world. At the same time, it also reveals some of the assumptions and expectations that you might be carrying around with you. This goes back to some of those commandments of people pleasing that I know we talked about in episode one, which, if you missed it, these are sort of the quiet rules and unspoken expectations that underpin a people pleasing habit and that many of us quietly and maybe even unconsciously hold ourselves to. There are things like, I should never pose an inconvenience, or I should always do what's in my power to be helpful, and that we shouldn't have needs or pose an inconvenience in our relationships. So when we talk about how to speak your mind more, like I said, I think for many of us, there's a hidden assumption at play that being honest and direct is an imposition or a violation of the unspoken rules of the game or the relationship, really. And that quiet assumption is exactly what can make these types of conversations feel nerve-wracking. So take a moment, if you will, to think honestly about this for a minute. How true is it that your hopes and your expectations in close relationships include things like agreement, harmony at all times or whenever possible, total alignment, lack of conflict, stuff like that? So then in those instances when your desires or your values or your needs do bump up against the needs or preferences of the people you're close to, how true is it that you feel yourself tense up when that happens? Probably because the story playing in your head is something like, I'm imposing, I'm doing something out of line, I'm causing a problem, or that this isn't the way I'm supposed to be showing up, something has gone wrong here. For many of us, that moment, you know, that uh-oh moment when we spot the gap or the chasm between our own desires or needs or expectations or preferences and those of the other person, that moment is one where we start to tell ourselves that we're in violation or that we're about to be, that we're somehow breaking the rules by disrupting the order, and we're breaking our unspoken relational contracts by making waves or causing friction. Now, my goal here is not to be overly simplistic or hyperbolic, but what I'm getting at is an honest question of whether some part of you is expecting or aiming for 0% conflict or friction in your relationships, and then using that as some kind of indicator for how good a friend or spouse or colleague or parent or child you are. And that's a question that only you can know the answer to. But if it is the case, or at least if it's true that you're holding yourself to the bar of a very low percentage of friction or conflict in your relationships, my next question is this. How likely is it that you'll succeed? And how much room does that leave you to be who you really are? So it's interesting. I think many of us are capable of doing a special kind of mental gymnastics where we somehow expect and allow room for other people to have needs or inconvenient preferences or specific desires, and yet we're often prepared to adapt or accommodate them. Meanwhile, we don't hold those same allowances for ourselves. It's something that's reserved for other people, you know, to have those needs, to raise their hand, to have a request, to sort of disrupt the flow of things. And so the paradigm shift that I'd like to introduce for your consideration here today is that a willingness to speak up or express a dissenting view or ask for something inconvenient or disappoint someone with your honest answer, what if these things weren't infractions the way we've been thinking of them, but instead they were part of your job description in your relationships? What if taking up that uncomfortable space was actually literally proof that you were pulling your weight? What if that was a profoundly kind thing for you to do, and even your responsibility in relationship with others? Up until now, it's very possible that these things have felt like the kinds of things you need to somehow apologize for or maybe like they require some explanation or like justification before you go about rocking the boat. But if you think about any relationship or conversation as a two-way exchange, I want you to ask yourself, where is it written that it is your role to stay agreeable and flexible perpetually, while it is the other person's role to set the course with their wants, needs, or preferences? And that's a little bit hyperbolic here, but I think it bears some questioning around how often are we sort of assuming that role of the flexible one while allowing all kinds of space for other people to sort of raise their hands and make waves. And what might change then if you started to see yourself as more of a co-pilot or a co-creator in each of these relationships? A role where your job, your literal responsibility, was to play an active role in helping to shape the relationship by showing up with the fullness of who you are in any given moment. What if showing up over and over again with honesty, with clarity, with bravery was actually the ultimate sign that you were engaged in the relationship and holding up your end of the deal rather than something to apologize for? So through this lens, suddenly we can start to understand that willingness or that ability to speak up or disagree as something that doesn't automatically require an apology. Instead, it becomes a signal that you're pulling your weight, that you're doing your job, that you're invested and you're doing the work. And by that logic, the name of the game in any relationship with others starts to shift too. It's no longer about avoiding conflict, and it's more about staying engaged and in integrity. Not trying to hide from some of those hard conversations, and at the same time, not minimizing what's true for you, even when it makes the waters choppy or when it creates some friction. It's about aiming for integrity over agreement. And that's a big shift for many of us. But I think it can be a really empowering one to start to see the possibilities that lie within that perspective shift. Now, that's not to say that conflict won't still feel uneasy or uncomfortable. I think it's important not to deny that reality and to hold some space for those feelings when they do come up, because they will, and that's okay. But that's where having the tools to navigate and weather those difficult conversations makes it so much easier. There's another aspect to this that I want to highlight. You know, we've been talking about how speaking up honestly and directly, even when it's uncomfortable, can be a sign of integrity. But going beyond just that inner integrity piece, there's also an outer generosity to it too. And I want to explore that for a second. So if you think about it, there is an inherent generosity to being clear about what you need or feel or want or think in many cases, even if it doesn't always feel that way. So here's what I mean by that. There is, and this will not surprise you if you've met me, I hate to be a cliche here, but there is a Brené Brownism that I love. In one of her books, God knows which one, she has so many and they're great, but in one of her books, Brené Brown writes, clear is kind. And in fact, I would go on to editorialize that a bit and add that clear can be wildly thoughtful and generous. So when you share openly and honestly about what's going on with you, and when you willingly shoulder some of that discomfort that comes with doing that, you're effectively sharing the load. And when you do that, the people closest to you no longer have to guess or try to read between the lines or wonder or worry that there might be something secretly going on with you that you're not sharing and they're trying to read your mind. You know, suddenly it becomes easier for them to trust you and to take you at your word. The alternative, of course, is when we dodge the discomfort of being clear or honest about something uncomfortable so that we can maintain that illusion of harmony, which might be more in line with how many of us are used to operating. And when we do that, we end up offloading the discomfort onto the other person, either by making them guess what's going on with us or wonder what we really mean, or by making them the villain in our own minds without ever really giving them the benefit of knowing that or giving them the chance to sort of work through that with us in conversation. And again, I say all of this not so that you can go forth and beat yourself up for all the ways you've, you know, been a jerk or you haven't been doing it right this whole time. But the goal here is to try to highlight some of the areas where you might have an opportunity to adopt a new perspective, to question some of those assumptions, and to make different decisions about how well some of these things have really been working for you, and how interested you might be in exploring a different way forward with some of this information and perspective that you have now. And this is also where it's really important to have compassion for yourself as you're doing this work. You know, this work of questioning and rewriting patterns is not something to be taking lightly. So just keep in mind, what has felt nice or thoughtful or generous up until now has everything to do with the assumptions and the expectations and the fears and the beliefs that you've been carrying and that you learned at a young age through your lived experience. We talked about that more back in episode 1, where we really unpacked that term people pleasing and where it comes from. And there's a lot of fodder in there to remind you that, like, you're not broken. You're not behaving these ways or in the habit of behaving in these ways for no reason. There was very good reason that you developed those habits in the first place. Now you have an opportunity to take what you know, sit with these new perspectives, question them a bit, and decide how you want to move forward. Now, as always, I don't want to leave you hanging in terms of that question of, okay, but how do I actually integrate this stuff? So with all that philosophical talk about the generosity of speaking up and showing up honestly, let's talk about some integration strategies to help you translate this big perspective shift into an actual different way of showing up and using your voice in your relationships, or at least starting to experiment with a new way of showing up. So I like to think of these three things I'm about to share as little psychological tricks that you might experiment with to help interrupt old patterns and assumptions and start stepping into a new way of showing up that still feels in integrity for you. The first little psychological trick I want to share is something I like to call traffic signs over telepathy. And let me explain what I mean by that. What's easier to read, a traffic sign or somebody's mind? So here's where I'm going with this one. If there's an outcome that you're hoping for in a relationship that feels uncomfortable to ask for directly, so that might mean you're secretly wanting someone to do something for you or to bail you out or to quote unquote catch your drift or take a hint or read your mind about something that you're really thinking, this is where it's easy to fall into old patterns of holding back because of the discomfort of asking for those things. So whereas banking on telepathy is obviously asking a lot of the other person, you're asking them to read your mind, not to mention it comes with a pretty low chance of success. Traffic signs, on the other hand, are meant to be clear, helpful guides. If you think about a traffic sign, whether it's, you know, a lane ending sign with the little line that bends and, you know, shows a lane merging, or a yield sign or a stop sign, they tend to give context about what's about to happen and clear instructions, at least if you're familiar with those signs. Like if they're the ones in the country or the area that you're used to living in, you have a pretty good idea of what they're telling you. So in that instance where you might be tempted to bank on telepathy, ask yourself, if I believed, like really believed, that the kindest thing I could do for someone else was to offer this person context and clear instructions, like a traffic sign, about what I want or need, what would that sound like? What would a clear, concise, helpful traffic sign look like or sound like in this instance? So that's some food for thought for you. The second little psychological trick I want to introduce you to is to assume there's a solution to be found. So because so many of us carry these assumptions I talked about earlier, you know, assumptions like speaking up or disturbing the flow is an imposition or a violation or something to apologize for, many of us often assume an apologetic stance when we're doing these things. We've already decided it's going to be a whole thing. We've already decided it's going to start a conflict or be wildly disappointing or like open a whole can of worms. And you know what? Sometimes we might be right about that. And still, sometimes when we go into a conversation with that assumption, it's written all over our face and it shapes our approach. And that approach can actually act as a cue for the other person that there is something to be upset about. It can set a tone without us even realizing it and like unwittingly shape the rest of the conversation and how it unfolds. So without being wildly naive or totally failing to read the room, you might ask yourself, How would I start this conversation if I assumed there was a solution waiting to be found around the corner? I find personally that for me, this makes it so much easier to adopt that kind of yes and posture that I talked about in the last episode, episode 3. Sometimes allowing the spirit of collaboration to sort of take the wheel can keep the conversation moving forward in a helpful way instead of getting hung up on the details of what you're saying no to or the prickly thing you're asking for. It can keep the conversation moving forward in more of that collaborative, co-creative, let's figure this out sort of spirit. And again, yes, there will be times that you are wrong in assuming that there is an easy solution waiting to be found. Things aren't always rainbows and sunshine in our relationships, and depending on the magnitude or the intensity or the context of the thing that you're talking about, it might still be a difficult road to navigate. But in the times where it does work out, where there is an easy solution to be found, you can save yourself a lot of stress and angst by coming in with that mindset of, there's a solution here. We're going to figure this out. Let's not assume this is going to turn into a whole thing. And then the third little psychological trick that you might try out is to experiment with using some version of the phrase, thanks for asking for what you need. And here I'm specifically talking about when somebody else is asking you for something uncomfortable. Now, I've found that shifting the way that I receive or respond to uncomfortable asks or truths actually has started to change the way I feel when I'm the one who has to share an uncomfortable ask or truth. So when someone asks me for something prickly and I'm able to respond with, thanks for asking for what you need, even if what follows next is sort of uncomfortable or disappointing or we have some back and forth or it's not necessarily the most pleasant conversation, by starting it out with that, thanks for asking for what you need, it sets a collaborative tone. It sends the signal that you raising your hand and saying something that I either disagree with or that's inconvenient for me or that's taking me by surprise isn't by design bad or gonna trigger this whole series of negative, horrible events, right? So by using that phrase, thanks for asking for what you need, there's like a little bit of a double benefit here. First, it models for other people what's possible. It introduces a new way of having these uncomfortable conversations. And obviously, it's important to keep in mind that just by us modeling this behavior of thanking someone for asking for something uncomfortable, we still need to stay unattached to the outcome. We can't force people to adopt this too. We're not doing it so that they'll take our lead, right? Like that gets back into some of that manipulative territory. But this is more about the gift of showing people what's possible, setting a different tone, modeling a different way, and there are energetic ripple effects to that, at least in my experience. The second big benefit of incorporating this phrase into my vocabulary and my relationships more often, I've found, is that it reinforces in my own mind that not every uncomfortable ask or share has to be the start of a tornado. It helps me see beyond the binary of agreement is good and disagreement is bad. And instead, it reminds me that something uncomfortable can still lead to a collaborative, productive, solution-oriented conversation. Again, this kind of ties into that idea of the apologetic posture I talked about a minute ago. So this helps even if someone else is coming to you with that apologetic or that kind of nervous posture, responding in this way can help send them a signal that they don't need to have that and that you can have kind of an upright, productive conversation moving forward. So with those three little psychological experiments that you might start to play with, so the first one was traffic signs over telepathy. How can I give someone clear context and instructions? The second one being assume there's a solution to be found and getting rid of that apologetic posture. And then the third one was experimenting with thanks for asking for what you need or some version of that when somebody asks you for something uncomfortable or shares something uncomfortable with you. And of course, you might tweak the wording of that, but I think you get the idea. By having those three tricks up your sleeve, my hope is that you start to open up a world of possibility beyond that binary where honest and direct is bad and ridden with conflict, and smiling and swallowing your inconvenient needs is the only way to be warm and kind and good in your relationships. In fact, what I want to sort of open up is this idea that there's a Venn diagram and that between those two things, being honest and clear, and being warm and kind, there's a big circle of overlap. And in fact, I think there's a lot more for us to explore there in terms of how to find your communication style and how to step into that overlap and communicate in that way in a way that still feels true to who you are. I think there's a lot more to explore there. I kind of have it in the back of my mind that we'll do more episodes on that, but I'll also wait to hear if that sounds interesting to you. But as we wrap up, I just want to leave you with a few closing thoughts. The first one is, as with everything I share with you, there's a giant asterisk on all of it, which says, remember to use your discernment and trust your gut, especially as it relates to your personal safety. So, and that could mean your physical safety, your emotional safety, your psychological safety. If you are in conversation with a person who you do not feel safe with, or who you can trust yourself to gauge that it's not going to be a safe or a productive conversation, I would say don't feel like you need to use these tools, or rather trust yourself to gauge what the best way is to either navigate the conversation or exit the conversation, depending on what's right and safe for you in that moment. And of course, there are all kinds of dynamics relating to power and privilege that will mean that these types of tips and ideas will apply differently to everyone. My hope is that they plant some seeds of possibility, and from there, you'll have some new tools to experiment with and to find what works for you. The other closing thought I really want to leave you with is that communicating your needs clearly and honestly is difficult, and that's okay. But learning and integrating this new skill is going to take time. So I just want to encourage you to be patient, be gentle with yourself, give yourself time and space to practice, to get better at it, to get comfortable, to try things on that don't quite work, and to find your style. And in doing so, you can start to find the stuff that really sticks or suits you or works well for your voice and your personality and your tone and your style. Just above all, be gentle through this process. This is the kind of thing that's going to come with practice and patience. I can assure you, I believe in you. I'm excited to hear how this goes for you. But through those ups and downs, the highs and lows, the challenging moments, just stick with it. I promise there will be payoff. And as always, if you bring this into your relationships, if you play with integrating these things in new ways, I'd love to hear how that goes for you. I'm crossing my fingers and rooting for you. Thanks for joining me for today's episode. If you're enjoying the show, let the overlords at Apple Podcasts know. Seriously though, it goes a really long way if you subscribe and leave a rating and a review. Thanks in advance. If you're looking for even more support around the conversations popping up in your life and relationships, head on over to theheartyfig.com. That's the H-E-A-R-T-Y fig.com. And that's where you'll find an interactive, I like to think of it as a part quiz, part workshop that'll offer you some personalized support based on your particular situation and what's tripping you up about it. The best part, it's 100% introvert friendly and can be done totally on your own time with as many pauses as you need. Most of all, thanks for being here. See you next week.